Members, we'll call the meeting to order. We do have a quorum. First item of business, I need someone to approve the minutes for March 9th.
So moved.
Representative Purcell has moved the minutes for March 9th. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. So first of all, members, I'd like to point out today is Multiple Sclerosis Day on the Hill. All right, that's why we're in orange, and I am heading over for an event over in the Rotunda. So we're going to have the fine Representative Anderson chair the committee today. All right, and also Representative Szymanski, you have an update, do you not?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would just like to remind everyone that today, March 15th, is National Ag Day. And it falls during National Ag Week, March 13th to 19th, a time when producers, ag associations, corporations, universities, government agencies, and countless others across America gather to recognize and celebrate the abundance provided by American agriculture. As the world population soars, there is an even greater demand for food, fiber, and renewable resources produced in the United States. The National Ag Day program believes that every American should understand how food, fiber, and renewable resources and products are produced, the value, the essential role of agriculture has in maintaining a strong economy, appreciate the role agriculture plays in providing safe, abundant, and affordable products, and acknowledge and consider career opportunities in agriculture, food, fiber, and renewables resource industries. So, Mr. Chairman, I recommend that everyone consider agriculture today, especially as well as every day of their lives, and the importance of the ag economy and the agricultural sector here in Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Representative Szymanski. Especially when we have a meal today, think about agriculture. First bill up is Representative Biskins, House File 548, and I will move House File 548.
Mr. Chair, to where?
It would be referred to the Committee on Taxes. Good morning, Representative.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. This bill has been before you before and was thoroughly hashed over just to bring it back up. I'll explain very quickly. I have a gentleman in my legislative district. He raises some wild and exotic ducks, which is, according to law, if you raise this waterfowl, you have ag land, but only if you sell it to shooting preserves. We are adding that if you also sell this to, like this gentleman, he sells them to the DNR, he sells them to zoos, he sells them to collectors, that his property would also be classified as ag land. Right now, because the way statute is written, his property is going to be rezoned as commercial property, and it would simply put him out of business. Before we my initial proposal opened this wide open to say anyone who raises this game birds or waterfowl is ag land. It's a little more broad as I talked to people about than I wanted. So, Mr. Chairman, what you have before you is an amendment which would reinstate the language which says if you're selling it to shooting preserves, it's ag land, but would also add new language which says that if you're breeding them for other purposes and you have a license to breed them, all right, then your property is considered ag land. And it's modeled after what's already in law. If you look at the bill itself, if you look at page 4, lines 11 and 12, you will see there is licensing language for when a bunch of maple trees are considered ag land versus just maple trees, and it has to do with licensing. The amendment before the committee adds that same type of licensing language for people growing or raising game birds and waterfowl. So, Mr. Chairman, if you could move the amendment And then we do have the assessors who worked this language out with me, and they'll testify to the amendment.
I will do that. I will move amendment to the H0548A1 amendment to Representative Biskin's bill. And are there any discussion on that amendment?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have Ms. Gloria Pinky here from representing the assessors who will testify to the amendment prior to it being voted upon.
Go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Gloria Pinky. I'm a manager in Dakota County Assessor's Office, but I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. And the association, we would really like to thank Representative Biskins for working with us to narrow this down and give us better parameters so that not everyone who raises a duck or a chicken in your chicken coop may qualify, and this does, we believe, will accomplish that, and we fully support the bill as amended.
Okay, Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'd appreciate a yes vote on the amendment.
Any discussion from members of the committee on the A1 amendment? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Biskins, how many people would you estimate or have knowledge of that are in a situation where they have a game farm that's licensed, similar to your constituent?
Representative
Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Anderson, I believe Mr. Tashney said that his level of competition in the state of Minnesota is zero. So to do exactly what he does, there's no one else that I'm aware of or he was aware of. However, when it comes to the number of people who are licensed under the state of Minnesota to do this task, I don't have the answer to that, but maybe Ms. Pinky would know.
Thank you.
Ms. Pinky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. I have no idea. I don't know either how many are licensed. Because this is, I believe, licensed under the Department of Ag, they would be a better source of that information. I'm sorry, I don't know.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. However, I will say, Representative Anderson, that if they are licensed, then prior to recent legislative changes, their property probably was ag, as Mr. Tashney's was for the last decade, and it was recent changes that created this issue. So it would be beneficial, and it probably wouldn't change their current status. It would be a going forward, and that's the same with Mr. Tashney.
Thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Pinky, is this property in Dakota County?
Mr. Chair and Representative,
go ahead, ma'am.
It is not.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, if I could ask Mr. Sullivan to maybe read what the language would be at 4.6 and 4.7 if this amendment were to pass.
Go ahead, Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair and members, would the amendment, the language on lines 4.6 and 4.7 of the bill, would read, game birds and waterfowl bred and raised on a game farm licensed under section 97A.105 or for use on a shooting preserve licensed under section 97A.115.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to be clear about that, Mr. Sullivan, because as I read the amendment, we reinstate the stricken language. Okay, no, actually, I think that it works. Thank you, Mr. Sullivan, for reading it through.
Any further questions on the A1 amendment? Representative Lemire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, I don't believe this will have any effects to the Green Acres bill, but in your opinion, is this all right with you and the Green Acres bill?
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Lemire, I do not believe it has any effect, and it's not my intent, but Mr. Chairman, I do believe Ms. Pinky would also like to speak to that.
Ms. Pinky, go ahead.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lemire and members, I would agree with Representative Biskins. I don't see that this would have any impact on Green Acres. The other requirements, if they would be met, may qualified for Green Acres, but not this on its own.
All right. Thank you.
To the amendment, All in favor of the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The amendment passes. To your bill, Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would appreciate members' support on House File 548 as amended to be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Questions from the committee? Seeing none, all in favor of House File 548 being passed, re-referred to the Committee on Taxes, say aye.
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 As amended, and opposed, same sign. The bill is passed and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
And next up, we have Representative McApplepatrick, House File 993, to be heard and laid over for possible inclusion in the Ag Omnibus Bill. Welcome, Representative, and to your bill.
Good morning. Thank you. I am here to move House File Number 993, but before that, I would like to move the Amendment A11.
I haven't found that one yet. Okay, we have the A11 amendment.
Yes.
To your amendment, Representative.
Yes, it is. It just further clarifies and tightens down the wording of the bill itself.
So you're moving your amendment?
Yes, I am.
Any discussion on the A11 amendment from committee members? If not, all in favor of the A11 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
And opposed, same side. Amendment passed. Is the bill in the order in which you would hope it to be?
It is.
Okay, go ahead, proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The history behind this bill is that in 2009, the Aiken County Agricultural Society, in discussion with a private business owner, wanted to do an exchange of land with that business owner. It was a very convenient location. The businessman had, he wanted to expand his business, could not in that place, but he had property that was adjacent also to the fairground on the other side, and it was a very similar value, so that there it would have made a very clean exchange. He would have had the room to expand his business, and the Agricultural Society would have acquired property so they could have had an additional entry into the fairgrounds, so that the trucks and so forth going to the barns and the animal pens would have had a separate entrance so that they didn't need to drive through the fairgrounds proper, which, you know, is not only inconvenient, but you can see it would be perhaps a hazard as well with all, you know, the kids and everything. So they had moved ahead. It was agreeable with all of the parties involved, but when it came time for the titling, the title company said that there is no provision in statute for them to do an exchange of lands. And so this bill would allow that provision to be added to the wording. And I would like to just read a statement from the land commissioner for Aiken County in his absence today. Statute 94.344 clearly outlines the process for exchanging county-administered tax forfeited land for private lands, and these types of exchanges are routinely accomplished. But exchanges of county fee title lands are not directly referenced in Statute MS-371 other than for right-of-way acquisition. Agriculture Society-owned property also lacks specific language in statute, but both entities can sell, lease, or convey property per statute. So this bill then would allow the provision, when it's agreeable to all parties involved, without exchange of cash, to exchange like-valued property. There should be mutual benefits involved for all. No loss of tax base, land. And it provides also for a clear and open process so that everyone can be involved and have input. And at this point, I would like to ask Jerry Schoenfeld to come up He is the lobbyist for the Minnesota Federation of County Fairs.
Good morning, and state your name, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jerry Schoenfeld. I do work with the Minnesota Federation of County Fairs, and Representative McElpatrick had asked me to take a look at this bill and see how it might affect our fairs. The bill is intended to deal with the local situation in Aiken County, but it does have some statewide impact in the fact that it changes the powers in a limited way. And we're okay with the bill. You know, there's two sections to it. One deals with our section of law, Chapter 38. We're fine with that. In terms of the other, it deals more with county section of law, and so I guess I can't speak to that, but from the fair standpoint, we're okay with it.
Any questions from members? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative McElpatrick or Mr. Schoenfeld. I'm looking on page 3, line 14, and this was the piece that was amended by the author's amendment. And my concern is on the private appraisal. And I know elsewhere in law, when there's exchanges or when there's state purchase of property or there's some language about equivalent appraisal or some bumpers on making sure that it's an adequate appraisal. And I think your amendment tightens that up by saying it needs to be by a licensed real estate appraiser, but I'd like to get some idea on if there's something else that can be done there on equivalency or to make sure that the appraisal that's done by the private is an accurate appraisal.
Representative McElpatrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are you asking for perhaps a second appraisal or... I'm not sure what direction we're going with this.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, and maybe Mr. Sullivan could help out, but I think in some other purchases or exchanges, there do need to be two appraisals or there needs to be something about saying not more than 10% above or below market value. I'm just trying to make sure that if it's, let's say that the county agricultural land is appraised accurately so that the exchange is a good exchange, not having there's some protection for the public in that exchange, and maybe it's staff that can provide that detail of some other places in state law that ensure there's that protection by having equivalency.
Mr. Sullivan, can you help us out here?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, the corollary that comes to mind for me is that when the DNR contracts out for appraisal work, especially for conservation easements, when the department feels it does not have the expertise. And the contracted appraisal by the private party has to be approved by the Division of Lands and Minerals. So in this case, maybe a similar provision would require the private appraisal to be approved by the county board.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, is this bill being held over?
Yes, it's being held over for possible inclusion.
So maybe that's something we could look at just to tighten it up a little bit. I think it's pretty close, but if the author would be willing to work on this, that would be great.
Representative?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Yes, definitely.
More questions? Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative McElpatrick. This is actually an issue that could return in my own district, so I just have a couple questions. I think Representative Hansen's suggestion is a good one, so I'm going to bypass that. If I read the language at 310 to 317, without your bill, the county can acquire property for highway right-of-way without doing a public hearing. Do I understand that correctly? Under current law?
Representative.
I'm not sure I have an answer for that. Can you help me with
Mr.
that?
Mr. Sullivan.
Staff again.
Mr. Chair and Representative Moore, I believe that's correct. With the language as it reads right now, no bid is required, but only when the county is acquiring property for the right-of-way.
Mr. Chair, if I may continue.
Representative.
And Representative, I'm asking this because this is an issue that's going to be happening in my district right now. The way I read the bill, if this were to become law, a county seeking to acquire property for a right-of-way would now have to do the public hearing, put out the notice, and the like. Is that correct, if your bill were to become law?
Representative?
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes.
Representative McElfatrick, if I might, Mr. Chair, thank you. Is it your intent then to change the provisions for highway right-of-way as well? Is that what you were hoping to do, or were you hoping to provide a way to do these exchanges, for example, for county fairs? And I ask in part because I think you're adding a layer of hearings and the like for an area which we don't have them currently.
Representative McElfatrick.
Mr. Chair and Representative, it was not my intent to add another layer. This was intended to address only the issue for the agricultural societies.
Mr. Chair, I know this bill is being laid over. I think I would ask you to reconsider whether you want to delete the way that we do it right now for county highway right-of-way. And again, I know that this bill is being laid over, and I have a question for you, Mr. Chair. Given that we are affecting county procedures, hearings, notice, and like, I know you said this bill would be laid over. Should this bill be going to government operations as well? Or should it be heard at some point there?
It has not been requested to this point. And again, you ask me these difficult questions.
Sorry.
As of now, it's going to be laid over for inclusion here in the Ag Committee, and we will confer on that in the ensuing time and make a decision. Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just wondering if, since the counties are affected here, if there's somebody from the counties that would want to testify on the bill.
Anybody from county staff here? I saw some AMC people here yesterday, but any county people in the audience?
Well, since it's being held over, we can certainly consult with the counties in the meantime, so thank you.
Any further questions from members of the audience or committee members? If not, Representative McElfatrick renews her motion that House File 993, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the Ag Omnibus Bill. Is that your wishes?
Yes, it is. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All in favor of that, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Thank you. Coming up now is House File 264 with Representative Erdahl. And it's honored to have a bill such as this in our committee. I heard on Jay Leno last evening that the mention of this bill was on national television, among others. Good morning, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, you just can't keep a good bill down, I guess.
Would you like me to move your bill?
Yes, sir.
I would be honored. Representative Erdahl, and I would move that bill at the House File 264 be heard and laid over for possible inclusion in the Ag Omnibus Bill. Go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Consent calendar would have been good, but laid over is just fine.
You're not that famous yet.
Well, this is another step in a long process for this bill. It started in 2004 in the Ag Committee. This came from the committee administrator, and we started the first steps then. It's passed the House floor three times, only to suffer an unkind fate in the Senate. Don't want that to get in the way. This bill, House File 264, underscores that people are responsible for their own actions, particularly where food is concerned. Legitimate lawsuits involving tainted food, mislabeling, dishonesty are still allowed under this. Simply, if you eat too many cheeseburgers and get fat, don't sue the food retailer. This bill protects our retailers, processors, and ultimately the growers, our farmers, from frivolous lawsuits. This is about personal responsibility and reform. At my last count, 23 states had passed similar legislation. Started in 2003 when several teenagers in New York brought suit in a class action against McDonald's for their weight gain. The case was dismissed, but then revived several times until McDonald's finally settled in 2008. There have been other lawsuits. Kellogg's, Burger King, KFC, Wendy's all settle out of court, eventually costing millions of dollars that consumers wind up paying. Last summer, lawsuits were filed against McDonald's for Happy Meals in California. Now, that lawsuit was not specifically targeted at weight gain, but it is an example of another attack on the food industry. I could go on, and I have for 7 years. Let me just anticipate some of your questions. Have any judgments been won against fast food? Last year, not in the United States, but in Brazil, to a man who gained 65 pounds. And in the U.S., settlements have been reached, all costing us money, but no judgments at this point. Keep in mind that these lawsuits are not legal in 23 of our states. Are there any in Minnesota? Not yet, but particularly in the light of the rejuvenation of these lawsuits over the last year or two, I believe it's a matter of time. And this is the food industry is a $1 trillion industry in the United States. Is there any organized effort to oppose obesity lawsuits? There are seminars and conferences on legal remedies to obesity. Does it have wide public support? The Gallup poll that was done on this said 89% of the people favor this legislation. In more recent readers' polls conducted in the last few months in Minnesota, 80 to 90% of people support this. Is this a solution in search of a problem? It is true that fast food has not been found liable, but the problem and potential exists, and there is a cost. Liability insurance has risen 35%. No matter what those opposing this may say, lawsuits have been filed, and they will continue to be filed, and eventually they will in Minnesota. And we all pay through higher cost, and we shouldn't have to. The effects on our food, this affects our food industry, and ultimately the farmers who produce the food. With profit margins averaging around 4%, a single frivolous lawsuit is enough to put a small restaurant out of business. Now please understand, this is not about condoning obesity. I once received the Legislator of the Year Award for Minnesota from the American Heart Association. I don't condone unhealthy food. This is about common sense and making reasonable choices. The threat is real. It hasn't gone away. This bill has enjoyed the support of dozens of farm and food groups. I believe you have the list of groups that have supported this in the past. As I said, it has passed the Minnesota House 3 times, only to die in the Senate. It has also passed the U.S. House, only to suffer a similar senatorial fate. This time, I think the time is right for a more favorable outcome and to protect jobs and the pocketbooks of the people that we represent. This is about personal responsibility, protecting the food industry, protecting jobs, including farmers, and protecting consumers. Thank you.
Well said, Representative. Any questions for members of the committee? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl, you mentioned the suits that occurred back in the early 2000s. And I remember a few years ago we had McDonald's came here and shortly after that and highlighted their leaner meals. They had apples and all those type of things. And they cut back on the size and did a number of things. Do you think that those lawsuits had a result of a change in the corporate responsibility in terms of, or corporate decision-making, not corporate responsibility, but corporate decision-making? Did those lawsuits encourage some decisions on changing size, portions, options, menus? Did that occur as a result of that litigation?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen. Not being in the boardrooms of these fast food companies, I can't, you know, give you a definitely affirmative action, but I'm certain that a lot of factors, including lawsuits, have an impact on the decisions that they make regarding their products.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Erdahl, does market demand also do that, where people are looking for different alternatives and menus, but maybe it's not enough of a market demand. The niche is too small for some large corporations to provide those options.
Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, you know, again, that's possible too. But I approve of healthy choices, of some of these decisions that have been made to give more healthy options. But it comes back to that this bill is narrowly focused. It just basically says if you eat too much of a certain item or whatever, if you get fat because you're eating at a certain place, you can't sue just because of that. The other reasons that we find you know, harmful to people, mislabeling of food, adulteration of food, not telling the truth, whatever, that is still in it. You can sue for those things.
Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, and I am a supporter of the bill. I'm not sure if I've signed on all 7 years.
I believe you have, Representative Eakin.
But I did sign on this year, and just was curious. You mentioned that there had been no judgments that had been issued on the issue of obesity or obesity being held liable, but you mentioned settlements that have been made. And did those settlements deal with the issue of obesity specifically, and have there been lawsuits that have been brought forward on obesity and then settled out of court?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Eakin, they have reached settlements out of court. And they'll certainly... because the lawsuit was in regards to obesity, that was part of the settlement. A lot of times the details of settlements aren't released.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl, this bill has gotten notoriety in many different facets, and I had a constituent ask me, how many jobs does this bill create?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Falk, how many jobs does this bill create? I think it's easier to talk about how many jobs it can save. We have 900,000 restaurants in the United States. I don't know how many we have in Minnesota, but as I said before, with a 4% profit margin, one lawsuit can drive a small restaurant out of business. So I think it's more about trying to save jobs than creating.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But there has been no judgment that has done that in the state of Minnesota, or really that we could go and take actual court record from and prove that to be a true fact. Is that correct?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Falk, there have been no judgments in Minnesota. That is a correct fact.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Falk, follow up.
A few questions. Representative Erdahl, you referenced a trial or a judgment in Brazil. Was that by jury or was that a declaration by a judge, and how that came to be a judgment?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Falk, I'm not sure. I've got it in my file here. I can read through it. You don't want me to take the time to do it right now, and I'll get back to you directly on that.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to get to the point here. Representative Erdahl, do you recall the Seventh Amendment to the U.S. Constitution?
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Falk, will you want to read that one to me?
Basically, the...
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Basically, the premise is that we have right to trial by jury. And I'm going to frankly say that I think that this bill often undermines the faith people have in our government when we have... I think it's almost a radical idea when there's no court record, there's no court cases, and it seems like we're looking at a solution, trying to find a problem that doesn't exist. And it just undermines the basis that everybody has access to, whether it's justice or our court system, and to go and say that that's not the case, or we shouldn't allow, if there is a possibility that somebody was wronged, to have that righted through a judgment of their peers. It just it kind of goes against what I believe to be part of what makes us a democracy. And so I would say that although there's many people that support this bill, I just think it is one that really we don't need to have on our books because there's no proven need for it. And I think it gets in the way of other things. So that's my point.
I don't recall hearing a question, but would you care to comment on that, Representative Rudolph?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, I'm not tilting at windmills with this. I mean, I believe that this is an important piece of legislation, and I think that it's important, Representative Falk, that you spoke out for the 10% of the people of the country that oppose this. I mean, I think that that opinion is valuable. But basically, once again, this is narrowly focused. It just says take some responsibility for your own actions. It's something that is supported by a large number of people. And just the fact that something hasn't happened yet doesn't mean it's not going to. I may not have brought this bill forward again this year had not a couple of things happened, and one being the lawsuits that were once again filed last summer. And even though it was in Brazil, the fact that a judgment was reached. And then there's the other little fact that the Republicans took control of the Senate.
We do have a testifier in the audience. He may want to make his way down here. And in the meantime, a question from Representative Morrill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, I'm not quite sure why this bill's in this committee. I know it involves food, but really this bill's about civil litigation and civil liability. And I think, Representative Erdahl, as I look at this bill, I'm thinking of a 1993 movie, So I Married an Axe Murderer. And I never would have imagined I'd be quoting that movie in the House of Representatives. But I want to read you a couple lines of the dialogue from that 1993 movie. Dad, how can you hate Colonel Sanders? And the son says, because he puts an addictive chemical in his chicken and makes you crave it fortnightly. Here's my point. Your bill, I think, limits potential liability to manufacturers and others who, I believe it's knowingly and intentionally act. Is that correct?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Moore.
Yes. Members, that's on line 2.8, knowing and willful violation. And I'm wondering, if I understand, Representative Erdahl, if you could let the committee know, I think a discussion came up in the Civil Law Committee about your willingness to perhaps widen that scope of liability. Is that correct?
Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Morrow. I did express a willingness to discuss that, and my door was open, and no one came to discuss it with me.
Representative Morrow?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that's maybe why I'm here now. Having that discussion, I'm not on the Civil Law Committee, and I wasn't aware that you had made that offer. Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, I would suggest that you may need to expand that liability to at least recklessness, and here's why. It may be that a manufacturer, a marketer, or other doesn't know that they're deceiving the public when it comes to ingredients in the food. They're rolling the dice. And we later find out, my gosh, there was a deception. This actually was a fatty food that was being pawned off, if you will, as being healthful. So I'm going to ask you now, would you be willing to expand the potential scope of liability beyond knowing and willful?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Morrow. This bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. I would be certainly willing to discuss that because, as the noted philosopher Charlie Sheen once said, never let can't get in the way of happen.
Well, Mr. Chair,
I'm speechless.
Well, if you're going to get quotes from
Representative Erdahl.
Well, Mr. Chair, then I'll end with Seinfeld, and there's an episode of Seinfeld in which they all think they're eating no-fat yogurt, but they have to keep expanding their belts because it's actually fatty yogurt, and that's maybe the final pop culture reference we need in this discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Morrow, but they can't under this, they can't sue the yogurt company or the cows for getting fat.
We're going to pause here for a second and let the emotions settle down a little bit. I'd like to introduce a ninth grade class this morning from KMS, Kirkhope and Murdoch Sunberg High School, out in Representative Falk's area, also in my area. And they are here participating in the Minnesota Historical Society's Capital Historic Sites Voice of the People. Your role in Minnesota government, their tour and educational program. Would you stand up and we'll give you a welcome. More questions, Representative Kath.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair, and I'm glad that this bill made it to us here. I had an interesting email from a constituent who has a question for you, actually, Representative Erdahl. And the question was is that you're looking at here saying that the judicial branch can't get into this or shouldn't weigh into this because it's a personal responsibility in food consumption. But their question was, do you think the government should get involved when it is tax dollars, such as like EBT cards and things like that, of saying whether or not somebody should be able to purchase food with their EBT card? So would you say that personal responsibility would be there too? In other words, that they should be able to buy fatty foods and be able to purchase whatever they want to that way? And I just thought that was kind of interesting, that this is looking at it from your personal responsibility with the judicial system not weighing in. But how would you feel about that?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman. Representative Kath, I'm just staying focused on the bill. What people get with their EBT cards is at present up to them. I'm not dealing with that. I'm focusing on lawsuits dealing with obesity, which is only what this bill addresses.
Representative Kath, a follow-up. Representative Shemansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And, excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Erdahl.
I should say that the Dorito, the cheeseburger Doritos today, were courtesy of Representative Shemansky.
Thank you. I was wondering about that. Representative Shemansky.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't want to claim responsibility for those.
But you're not liable.
I would suggest that the Doritos don't do a cheeseburger justice. So, but Representative Erdahl, just the title of your bill, Personal Responsibility in Food Consumption, I think puts the emphasis where it belongs. It's personal responsibility and the need for, civil legal action, for obesity, I think, in regards to this bill is unjustified. And so I commend you for bringing this bill forward and look forward to it moving along in the process. Thank you, Representative Erdahl.
Was there a question there? Okay, thank you. We are having high-level discussions here as you speak. We have a testifier at the table. Please, or welcome, and please identify yourself, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Justice. I want you to know that I'm born and raised in the Red River Valley. I've cleaned out the hog barn. I've driven beet truck. I've tried milking a cow at the state fair, not so much. But I've been around agriculture all my life, and I want you to know I also represent farmers relative to permits in front of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, flooding problems, regulatory issues. Whatever my comments are here today, I want you to know that we absolutely support production agriculture in Minnesota, even though we have some concerns about this bill. And it has nothing to do with agriculture. You know, not a single case has been filed in Minnesota relative to weight gain, and I want to talk about the specifics of the bill itself, but obesity is the single largest health concern in America, killing over 400,000 U.S. citizens a year, according to the American Medical Association. The Center for Disease Control says that 60% of us are overweight, and 24% of us are obese. obesely overweight. It is a huge health concern. And we're dealing with a bill that, on its face, deals with if I eat too many cheeseburgers, I don't have a civil cause of action. You don't have one today. This bill doesn't have any impact on that. But the reason that there are no cases in Minnesota and they have not been successful elsewhere is because a case based on weight gain is legally deficient. The reason for that is that they lack proof. There are many causes for obesity, lack of exercise, the food portions you eat, genetic predisposition, lifestyle. We don't allow cases in Minnesota, and I handed out to the committee what our law is relative to our own personal responsibility and our assumption of risk of our conduct. Minnesota law 604.01 deals with our fault in a civil case. And I want you to know in Subdivision 1, it says that if our fault is greater than the person we're trying to bring a claim against, we have no claim at all. Also, what we use as a fault, or what is my fault as a person, we include the assumption of risk. I assume the risk of eating that cheeseburger. I assume the risk of eating, how many bananas did Greenhagen say he was going to eat? 200 bananas.
That was 16.
He assumed that risk. We also assume the risk for misuse of a product, which I think everyone would suggest overeating cheeseburgers is. These cases are not brought in Minnesota because they are legally deficient. I want you to also know that Minnesota law 549.211 allows for sanctions against lawyers that bring cases that lack legal foundation and are brought without merit. We already cover this, and I believe that's why no cases have ever been filed. I want to talk just briefly about the bill and some of the reasons that I think it needs to be improved here or in the Judiciary Committee. I don't know if you guys want to get into what a material violation of the Food and Drug Act is or not, but the very first problem I have with the bill in Section 1 is that it lacks definition. It does not have a definition of food. It doesn't tell you what it is. It doesn't tell you what you consume it for. I brought with me my props, Representative Erdahl. These are all dietary supplements you can buy over the counter that are food as it relates to this bill. This is all food. XPLC, dietary supplement, food covered by this bill. We don't know what's in it. We don't know if it gives you a racing heart. We don't know if it has an impact on your heart valves like other drugs have had, like Fen-Phen. This is made by one of the same pharmaceutical companies that manufactures other drugs. These are all foods. They've not been reviewed by the Food and Drug Administration, and they're all subject to this bill. So the bill lacks no definition of what food actually is, and so either the courts are going to have to determine that, and it's something for the judiciary to figure out in their committee, or the courts are going to have to do it on a case-by-case basis, what everyone here would call judicial activism, because we lack a definition of what food is. I want you also to know that this is the first time in the history of the state of Minnesota that we would be granting immunity to a manufacturer of a product. This is not based on weight gain. If you look at 1.21, or a health condition associated with weight gain. This isn't, I ate the cheeseburgers and I got fat and I want to bring a case. This is, I consumed something like XPL that was dealing with my weight, and they're going to argue you gained weight, wherever it is, that's going to be their defense, and my health condition now is barred from a civil cause of action. You know, and when you look at the back page of the bill, you need to know, and this is what we talked about in civil law, a material violation has to be a violation that is related to something that caused my injury. I could have violated something that may not be directly related to my injury, and I would be barred a claim under this bill. And Representative Erdahl has mentioned on more than one occasion that this bill has passed the House, and you need to look at some of the versions of this bill that have passed the House, because what they have said in the actions that are permitted is that you can have an action when the manufacturer negligently mislabels or improperly puts an ingredient in your product that makes you ill. This bill does not say that. I can assure you many members, particularly lawyers that were working on this bill on the floor, know that negligence is the touchstone. Now we've got such a high bar, you would never have a claim. And I can, you know, I can just tell you again, this is the first time in the history of the state immunity to manufacturers for my health condition that is a result of their product. That's the net effect of this bill. And that is something that we have never done in the state of Minnesota. And, you know, we do have problems. We have problems in agriculture. We're going to exceed $4 gasoline. We've got a nuclear meltdown in Japan that has destroyed 20% of the grain stock in Japan. We've got spring flooding coming up. This committee is going to deal with a 14% reduction in agriculture programs. The bachelor gave the wrong rose to the lady on the show last night. We got real problems. This bill is not one of them. Minnesota law already addresses this. It already covers it. There's never been a case filed. And I would submit to you that we are doing a disservice to our courts and by creating a perception that people file cases frivolously and without merit and consume our court times. I toil away in the Judiciary Finance Committee, and they are constantly struggling with court resources. And this bill that says people are actually filing these kinds of cases does them a disservice because they're struggling to do everything they can with the cases that they have. And civil cases that are the subject of this bill are down 40% in the last 10 years. There's no flood or rash of cases in Minnesota. Be happy to answer questions, Mr. Chairman. Would urge caution on the language of the bill. Nobody wants to have a lawsuit over somebody eating too many cheeseburgers and gaining weight. That's not what this bill does. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Carlson. Before we take any questions, one more group to talk about today or introduce, the National Council of Jewish Women from the Twin Cities area, and I believe Hadassah is what you're called. So would you stand up and let us welcome you to our Ag Committee this morning. Thanks for coming.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Representative Erdahl.
Okay. Respond just a little bit there, please.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. First of all, as you get on your list here, you have 42 food groups, farm groups, and others that have a different opinion from Mr. Carlson. For the first, he says this is the first time that the state of Minnesota would be granted immunity under this. It's probably also happened the first time in 23 other states, and I don't think that the sky is falling in any of those. Not successful elsewhere, that's true, but that's how do you measure success? Were judgments reached? No. Were settlements reached that cost the fast food industry and the food industry money? Yes, they did. Now, in terms of defining food, I might, again, in the layover here after this bill, be able to look at that more closely. I'm certainly willing to make changes as they make sense. But those pills, as evidenced by Mr. Carlson, don't cause weight gain. Can't sue for those pills. They don't cause weight gain. And that's what my bill is about. And the other question, if this is such a big deal, if the lawyers of Minnesota are never going to sue over this, then why worry about it? And why fight this for 7 years? Unless you want to leave that door open just a little bit in case you change your mind and want to sue sometime. So, again, I agree with Mr. Carlson. We got a lot more important issues that we should be dealing with and will be dealing with in this session. And I'm ready just to move on and proceed from here.
Mr. Chairman and members.
Mr. Carlson.
I brought an article with me. I'm happy to share it with the committee. Foods that promote healthy weight gain, energy drinks that are high in calories, to those that are seriously working out and trying to gain muscle mass. You go to GNC and you look at all the products they sell to bulk you up. That's weight gain. And when I take something at one of those and buy it from one of those facilities to gain weight, and there's something in it that causes me an improper health condition, that manufacturer is immune. I'd suggest if you just put something else in here other than food, and you'd say that doesn't make sense. You know, let's take the, you know, the hypothetical of some other product and say the manufacturer is going to be immune from liability when they negligently do something that causes you harm, and the government, who business usually wants to get out of the way, is here to say we're going to protect you from your negligent, wrongful conduct. That just doesn't happen, and it's worth fighting for. And this, to us, is and can be a slippery slope where now we're going to grant governmental protection to businesses, whether, and none of us have any problems with the businesses on that list. I think I represent a couple of them. They're great companies. That's not a problem. But they're just not a threat. This is not a threat to them. And if you ask the business guy in the street, are you concerned about liability? They're going to say, yeah, I want to make sure I'm responsible to my customers. Are you concerned that you're going to get sued over this? This is not there. It just doesn't exist.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carlson, I want to go back to kind of Representative Falk's line of questioning and the exchange when Representative Erdahl said the 10% that agree with you. And I think Representative Falk was talking about the Constitution and the constitutional right to trial by jury. And as a lawyer, and we don't get that many lawyers in this committee, but are the people that you the people you defend always popular? is popular a test for what's right? I mean, I thought that our system and the Constitution was to protect rights, whether they're popular or not. And I'd like to hear your perspective on that.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm surprised that the number isn't 100% of people that would say you shouldn't file a lawsuit over the simplistic question of, I ate too many cheeseburgers, I got fat, I shouldn't file a lawsuit. I'm surprised it's not 100%. I'm there. I think everyone is there. That's not what this bill's about. Our Constitution in the state of Minnesota under Article 1, Section 4 guarantees me a right to trial by jury, and Article 1, Section 8 guarantees me a right to redress for every wrong, a complete redress. This absolutely takes it away. And other bills that grant immunity without serving a public purpose, which this one does not, take away our constitutional rights. And we're absolutely trying to bring that concept to the legislature that these are our rights that we've had since 1858, and we do not want them to be removed over a suggestion that there are cases being filed or frivolous cases being filed when there is absolutely no evidence that that has been the case.
Okay. Representative Hansen, any follow-up? Okay. Representative Swidzinski.
Chair Chemansky, Mr. Carlson, this you kind of talked about this potentially being like a slippery slope, essentially. That kind of got my mind thinking of other opportunities, skiing, actually. You know, when you buy the tag, it does have some sort of a hold harmless immunity for liability on the backside of that. Is there a correlation between the two?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Schmansky, absolutely. There absolutely is a correlation, and it's called the assumption of risk and our failure to mitigate our own damages that we cause to ourselves. And that is the law in Minnesota in 604.01, which I gave to the committee, that is absolutely in correlation. What we have problems with on violent equality. I want to talk to you another time about some of those liability waivers, but that ain't for today. But it is absolutely the same. And the only difference is we don't sign a waiver when we buy our cheeseburgers. It doesn't matter if we sign it or not. The law already imposes that on us.
Great. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify for or against this bill? Hearing none.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Erdahl? Oh, pardon me. Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carlson, could you help me understand the legal process a little bit? Just because I file a claim doesn't mean that I'm going to get a judgment in my favor, or with these judgments that have been reached doesn't mean that there's a public record to go and indicate that perhaps eating too much of one type of food was a course of action or cause of action that resulted in the judgment. Can you help to just understand that process a little bit?
And Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Falk. I don't necessarily like the phraseology, but you hear people say it frequently. You can get sued at any time for about any reason. And I don't think that's a good thing, but that's just a fact of life. However, to get to a viable claim, you need to have a viable tort claim. You need to have a duty on the part of the person you have a claim against. They need to have breached that duty, and that duty has to result in harm to you, and that's balanced against your own activities. And so, many times cases are filed. Sometimes they're settled. Sometimes they're settled in a way that I don't think they should be. I think that when the insurance companies force companies to settle a claim when there's no liability on behalf of the company, I think that does a disservice to the company. Settlements are often confidential, but the cases that Representative Erdahl has mentioned are not about weight gain. And some of the settlements are public. I'll give you a good example. McDonald's made a claim that they were going to remove trans fat, which is not good for us, from their French fries. They made a public splash about it. They didn't do it. They didn't remove trans fat from their French fries. And a public group brought a claim against McDonald's to say, hey, you told us you were going to do this. We all believed it. You didn't. And McDonald's settled that case, part of which no money went to any lawyer or to any individual person, but they put the money into an education campaign about proper eating. So, I mean, the cases that he's talking about that have actually been settled or judgments are not in any way related to weight gain. And I'm going to have to do a little internet work on what the legal system is in Brazil, because that's a new one for me. But to get to a case and to get to a settlement, they have to have had a duty to you. They had to have breached that duty, and that duty caused you harm. Without that, you just simply do not have a case in Minnesota.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carlson, on this handout where it talks about past supporters, it talks about recognizing that 23 states have enacted this type of legislation. From your viewpoint, you're saying that Minnesota doesn't need this. Well, what is the language that is here different from the language that was passed in 23 other states? And if so, what was it? If you can give me a
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Anderson, I can tell you that I have not examined all 23 of them, but I have looked at several, and they do have different exclusions. They have different definitions of food. They have different definitions of what allows you to bring a case forward when their actions are negligent. So there are a variety of them. The one that we have in front of us, just so the committee knows, is a model act that came from ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, as part of their tort reform package. It was adopted in several states. I don't think any state has adopted it in several years now, but it was part of a national package of tort issues that came through from ALEC, and it was based on the case that was filed in 2002 in New York.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Carlson, you would say that the language that was enacted in these other 23 states wasn't necessary.
Mr. Carlson.
That's a little different question, and the reason I'll tell you why is I know what our law says about assumption of risk, misuse of products. I can't tell you in all 23 jurisdictions if they have similar law or case law relative to assumption of risk. So I can tell you what I know about this. I can do some digging and find out what their product liability and other case law might be relative to these kind of products, but I can't tell you that off the top of my head.
Representative Anderson again, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carlson, I know that in some cases redundancy is not something that we like to see. Now, in the cases of going to the moon or nuclear power or things like that, redundancy is critical. So you're saying this is a piece of redundant legislation that's not necessary.
Mr. Carlson, once again.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, in all sincerity, the answer is yes. If we had legislation on everything that is not a case, the 18 volumes behind the chairman would be 50 volumes. You know, we haven't in the past created legislation about things that are not possible. And what this does is it takes that concept on its head of what's not possible and says, when you are the only time you need immunity is when you have that duty and you breach it. That's the only time you need immunity from liability. So what this does is that when I do have liability, I do manufacture something that causes a health condition, the government's going to protect me. That's the language of the bill, and this is on its face. That's what it says. And so that's the difference. Do we need a law to say, eat too many cheeseburgers, you can't bring a case? I don't think we need a law for that. This does substantially more than that.
Thank you. Representative Rudolph, comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, just briefly, because we've talked long enough about this. But the fact is, to say that the New York case did have to do with obesity. They sued on obesity. And it was settled, and it did cost millions of dollars. And again, whether a settlement is reached, whether a judgment is reached, the mere fact of filing, lawyers don't often work free. Sometimes, but not often. And it's costing money. Now, I said this before, I'll say it again. If this were not a big deal, if we could not sue in Minnesota under current law, then why fight this for 7 years? They're not that altruistic. In the last meeting that we had in civil law on this, Mr. Carlson was asking that I remove the word material under material violation. And under the legal opinion that I received on this, the effect of the change would be that any violation of the specified laws and regulations would subject the violator to liability if the violation was a proximate cause of the injury. As long as the violation is the proximate cause of the injury, it shouldn't matter whether the violation is material or not. In other words, taking the word material off would open it up for lawsuits.
This being a public hearing, anybody else in the audience who would care to testify on this bill? Seeing none, nobody else, I would renew my motion to have this bill laid over for possible inclusion in the Ag Omnibus Bill and encourage you, Representative Erdahl, to work on the definition of food.
Mr. Chair, point of parliamentary inquiry.
Representative Falk.
Does relaying a bill over require a vote, or is it simply laid over?
As far as I know, it's simply laid over.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, perhaps for the Nutrition Commission meeting, we can discuss the definition. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
We have one more bill on today's agenda having to do with the Rural Preserve Tax Property Program and a modification with Representative Davids. And there will be some public testimony on this bill as well, so stay close. Good morning, Representative Davids.
Good morning.
And I would move your House File 527 to be heard and laid over for possible inclusion in the Ag Omnibus Bill. Good morning.
Okay.
And begin.
Or, Mr. Chairman, does this need to go somewhere else? Or
what I have in my notes here is it's going to be laid over for possible inclusion.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members. This simply has to do with the modifying the Rural Reserve Program, and basically we're trying to match this up so it matches up with the Senate file over in the Senate that's moving forward. Members, it basically just strikes out, if you look at lines 1.12, to 1.15 or 1.14 deletes the conservation assessment plan. Line 1.15 deletes the land must be enrolled for the minimum of 8 years. And, of course, these things have all been discussed previously. I appreciate your support.
I have a question from Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Davids, I understand your passion for this issue. You weren't in the 3 or 4 days of hearings that we had where we came to an agreement, I thought, and moved a bill out. I see moving this bill out today as a breach of that agreement, that we were trying to come to a compromise, and I thought that we were holding some other bills back. But moving this bill out, I think, breaks that faith that we, in good faith, negotiated, and here we're just going to do what we want. And I don't think that's right. You know, you weren't here in those committees. You have introduced a bill like all of us do, but we did spend a great deal of time on this trying to come to a compromise, and it appears that all that work was for naught.
Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hansen, I would respectfully disagree. This bill would be sitting in the Ag Committee. It's not going anywhere out of at this point. And so it's certainly not my intent to in any way compromise the work that everyone did, but I want to give us some other avenues, if you would, if things don't go as we prefer.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, then Representative Davids, if this bill is held over or if it's going to sit here, are you interested in putting in the compromise language that was agreed to earlier in the committee?
Representative Davids.
Mr. Chairman, think that, yes.
Question from Representative Eakin. Pardon? Okay, thank you. I have a couple of testifiers from the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. Are they in the audience? Again, welcome, Ms. Pinky. Identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am Gloria Pinky. I'm a manager in Dakota County Assessor's Office, and I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. Excuse me. House File 527 is proceeding along the avenue that we worked very hard with Representative Lemire and members of this committee and others, and I'm happy to hear Representative David say that he is also interested in that. So at this point, it's going in the right direction. We would hope that it can get further along to be more comparable to Representative Lemire's bill as it works its way through this process.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier?
And Mr. Chairman, that
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That would be my intention.
Okay.
This bill is not to undo what everyone worked so hard on. So.
We appreciate that. Also, we have a representative coming down to testify from the Minnesota Farmers Union. Welcome, and identify yourself for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and I also I'm supportive of this bill, but more supportive of the compromise that came out of here. And I'm also glad to hear that wherever this bill goes or that bill goes, that we amend in the language from the Lemire bill that I think that everybody worked so hard on. And I also want to just remind everybody of the deadline that is coming up, the May 2nd deadline that farmers will be facing. So however you're proceeding with these two bills or the different bills that we do have that are the different bills that we do have that deadline coming up, that people will you'll start hearing more about the people that are in the Green Acres area as we get closer to that. So leave it at that. Thank you.
Questions for the testifier? Thanks, Mr. Peterson. Any final words, Representative Davids?
No, just appreciate you laying it over for possible inclusion.
With that, Representative Davids moves that his bill, House File 527, be heard and laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Bill. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
The motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and most members.
Pardon?
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
I believe you don't need the vote for the possible inclusion. That was Representative Falk's previous point, I think.
Okay. Glad he's not here. With that, I see our agenda for the day has concluded. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.